Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, chase your destiny. By Premium Plus Sports, that's premiumplus-sports.com, the best travel agency out there. By USA-swimrun.com, awesome races and awesome places. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, a two-time Paralympian, IPC World Championships. He's got three golds, and a bronze. And he won the 100 at the 2011-2015 Parapan American Games. His name is Jared Wallace. Jared, how are you?
Bob, doing great today. Thanks for having me, man.
Hey, always a pleasure. So, growing up, you were a runner growing up, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, my mom is a collegiate track athlete, so I tell people I was probably running before I was walking. The nature of the family. But, for fun as a kid, we'd go and do 5Ks on the weekends and little road races here and there. And something that, I just grew up always doing. It was a huge part of my life.
Well, and in high school, state champ, 800 and 1600. And at that point, when did you start to feel that there was something going on? You had pain in your shin?
Yes, it was my junior year. I had just won two state championships in the 8 and 16, as you just mentioned, and had trouble with shin splints, is kind of what we originally thought it was. And after taking some time off and going back to training and pain coming back and taking some time off and going back to training, we're just curious to see if it was something else. I could be injury prone. That was one option, but we had heard about compartment syndrome before and decided we might as well get tested for it to see if it is something that I did have. And that was when compartment syndrome was introduced to me, and I got diagnosed my senior year with compartment syndrome.
It's interesting, especially I see this a lot with runners, especially young runners. They'll be icing their leg, and a lot of times coaches don't quite get it. They go, you just have a low threshold of pain. The fact that your parents were athletes, I'm guessing they knew that it was something more right away.
Yeah, they were pretty in tune to it. And actually, my mom had compartment syndrome when she was running in college at the University of Georgia. She had one of the first compartment syndrome surgeries done. We were hoping that it wasn't that, and after the pain kept coming back, that was kind of light bulb went off in her head. She's like, I think that we need to get this checked out. So, I think that having them having this athletic background that they do helped us maybe look sooner than maybe others would have.
And so, when it was diagnosed, at that point, did they suggest surgery, or did they say, let's try to see if we can treat this other ways before surgery?
It was really my choice. There were a few options. They said, you can continue running in pain and take time off when it gets too bad. And, it always went away long enough to, do 4 to 5 months of training again. But, the thing that was tough for me is it always came back and I had to take that time off. And, they gave me that choice. And then they also said, it's a 6-week active recovery surgery and you'll be, pain-free running for, without any issues, hopefully. And so, I had been getting recruited by Division I colleges across the country, and when I'm looking at my senior year and the future as an athlete, the 6 weeks of rest for a pain-free future sounded pretty good. So that was what led me to ultimately make that decision to have that surgery.
And so during the surgery, something went wrong?
Yeah, we had complications in the surgery, and basically after the bandages were taken off on the first day of rehab, 4 days prior to surgery. The PT just didn't really like what he saw, and we went back to the doctor, and they pretty much sent me into emergency surgery. And when they opened my legs up, they realized that muscle had died, and due to complications in the first surgery, 60% of the muscle from my knee down had died, and so they had to begin an atrophy process and remove the dead muscle. And dead muscle is a breeding ground for an infection. So they were trying to, stabilize me and make sure that I didn't get an infection. And And we basically had 5 surgeries in 10 days to get me stable and to remove that dead muscle. And then you basically got to a point where after 3 weeks in the hospital, I was able to go home. But there was a lot of unanswered questions. Didn't really know what my functionality would be at that point. And I left the hospital with my legs open. I had wound vacs to keep them healing. And it was a long road that began there.
So did they operate on both legs or just one?
It was just my left leg.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
And so,
the right leg.
So when did they come back with the idea that, you know what, we might need to amputate?
You know, it was always part of the conversation. And even in the first 18 days or 3 weeks or so that we were at the hospital, there was talk of potential amputation, you know, if they weren't able to stabilize or get the muscle out, or if there was an infection that they weren't able to stop. You know, there were just all options we were continually talking about. And then when 4 months later we went in for another surgery and appointment, and it was like there's 3 options and then amputation. And then after that surgery, the next one it was 2 options and then amputation. So for me, I'd heard amputation for a while. But I was kind of, I didn't want to give up.
Of course,
in a sense.
Yeah.
And, I didn't want to, say, well, I'm just going to, I'm just going to throw in the towel and let's just do the amputation. I mean, in reality, I was scared of that thought, too. 17, 18 years old.
Of course.
Had a dream for my life and the direction it was going to go on. And it took a huge turn in an opposite direction. And, it was a lot to process.
So after you have the amputation, what did you have any information on Paralympics or track and field for amputees, or had you been doing a little bit of research knowing that this was a possibility?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that really helped me have a quick recovery from the amputation itself. Once I got to the point to ultimately make the decision to have the amputation, it was 10 surgeries of reconstructive. It was being addicted to pain medication. It was being in constant pain, not being able to feel the bottom of my foot, barely being able to walk without being in pain, having to constantly take time from standing and literally just resting, whether it was while I was working or walking between classes. And, it was a very hard year or two. And so I finally went and met with a doctor, and he basically, got me to place where I could begin dreaming of a future without, having a leg. And he, took the time to communicate to me the options that prosthetics would allow me to have. And it was the first time that it was presented in a way that I really thought, hey, maybe this is what I need to do. I remember leaving that appointment with that doctor saying, yeah, I think this is the right choice. And that was really when I began doing the research. It was 4 months from that meeting when we ultimately had the amputation, and we spent time meeting with prosthetic companies and doctors who would be willing to do that surgery, and came up with a really great plan. I knew exactly what prostheses I was going to be wearing postoperatively. We actually got to decide the limb length. And then I also met with a psychologist who was an amputee himself, and we really got to talk through the process and really prepare me mentally for what I was about to go through. So really being able to have that team behind me is a huge part of why I was able to I believe recover as quickly as I did.
Well, and you found a world record list, and you told your parents that your name was going to be on there.
Yeah, it was an interesting kind of out-of-body experience, but I think also it's a huge part of kind of just my personality and who I am. That doctor in that moment, I think, if I look back, for 2 years, I probably lost the ability to dream. When you have a plan for your life and it goes in a completely different direction than you thought it was going to go, it's hard to look at the future. Because you don't really know what it is going to look like. And having a doctor communicate a life with, having a prosthetic and having an amputation, and there was hope in that conversation. And so it got me to a place where, I could dream again. And I remember heading back to the hotel and Googling Paralympic track and field and coming across that world record list. And And it just, it was then where it was like, okay, we're going to do this. And I'm going to break these records, and we're going to go after this, and I'm going to be okay. And that was a really cool experience and cool time.
So within 12 weeks of the amputation, you've got your first running blade.
Yes, sir.
That is so cool.
And yeah.
But that's so important, right? It's like one door closes and another one opens up.
It's amazing. I can't stress enough the support from the team that I had and the people that came alongside of me and created those opportunities and, really gave me that second chance at life and having the opportunity 3 months after amputation to put on a running blade, to begin running again and really run after my dreams.
So within 15 months after the amputation, you win your first international gold and set world records at the 2011 Pan American Games.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. I remember sitting in the stairs of the village that we were at, and Kelly Carter, one of the coaches that was with us there, was walking up to his room, and he stopped and he said, "How you doing?" And it was the night before the finals, and I said, I looked at him, I said, "I think I can win this race." And I said, I really do think I'm gonna win this race tomorrow. I said, I feel really good. And I was sixth in the field of eight. I was not supposed to win. I was by far one of the guys that were expected to be in the back of the field. And
right.
But I just had this piece that I was gonna execute a great race and I was gonna leave it all on the track. And the gun went off, and at 30 meters I got out of my drive phase, and I didn't see anybody in my peripheral vision. And before I knew it, we crossed the line, and I'd ran the fastest time in the world in 2011, and won my first gold medal on the international stage.
So what was your time?
It was 11:31.
Now, what were some of your PRs in high school as a track guy, or did you run sprints, or were you mainly longer distance in high school?
So I was an 800 and 1500 meter runner, so yeah. It was a little bit different. I do remember running 1:400, and I went 24 seconds and change in the 400. In the 200. Excuse me, in the 200. So that was that was kind of the only comparison, and now my personal best in 200 is 21:80.
So faster.
Pretty cool. Yeah, a little bit quicker.
That is so cool. And so then, so now you're part of, you're traveling around the world. You're part of a team, and also I'm guessing in 2011, you're standing at the top of a podium with the national anthem playing.
Yeah, I had this, crazy dream, 16, 17-year-old, that I was going to run at the, college my parents went to and have, the University of Georgia, UGA, across my chest.
Yeah.
And, a few years later, I found myself, looking down after crossing the line, I see USA, across my chest. And it was just like never in a million years, that was the dream as an athlete to be able to represent, your country. And, although it was through a tragedy in a sense of losing my leg, it was also like the greatest gift and blessing that I'd been given. Losing my leg really was the gain of my life, and it's been an amazing, humbling experience. My perspective of the world has changed, and just the lessons I've learned and the experience I've been fortunate enough to have through this journey has just been something I couldn't even dream up if I tried.
So if people come to you and say, "Hey, Jared, it's such a bummer about losing your leg, and gosh, I bet you'd want your leg back in a second," what's your response?
Not in 100 years. And it happens sometimes, and people kind of are taken back by the response. But, I think life is what you make of it. And, I definitely could have made the choice to have my leg amputated and have a woe-is-me mentality and not do anything about it. But, you heard with the world record story, I'm not really a guy to sit back and, necessarily accept, mediocrity in a sense or a mindset that's not, driven or fueled by passion. And so, that was a choice that I made. And, I'm getting to live a dream every single day and so blessed by it.
So when I look at world championships and 2013 in Lyon, you get a gold in 400 and a gold in the 4x100, and then 2017. You know, times in events are great. What are when you look at races, what do you look at as your best race, as you know, either Paralympics or world championship, or maybe it's not either. Maybe it's just there was a day where you felt that this was the best race I've ever had.
Yeah, I think that it was. There are two races that come to my mind, and they were actually back-to-back races, and they were the last two races I ran before I got on a plane and headed down to Rio in to race in the Paralympic Games in 2016. And the first one was at U.S. Nationals, and I was just the strongest, most confident fit I'd been in my entire life and in my career. And you know, we were getting ready to make the team, and you know, I tied my old world record in the 100, 10.71 with zero wind, and it just executed a really great race, and you know, beat the field by a pretty large margin. And you know, I think from a preparation standpoint, from a mental standpoint, I think that was my best altogether race that was kind of getting me ready for the games. And the next week or the next month, I headed to England and raced the Paralympic champion Johnny in the 100 at the anniversary games in his home stadium in front of his crowd, in front of the hometown crowd. And the race was inside 24 hours from when I landed from flying from the States, and ended up running a 10.81 and beating him. You know, kind of big statement race before the games, and I felt like that was another moment for me mentally, just you know, saying, okay, hey, I'm here and I'm in the best shape of my life, and you know, I'm going to be a contender to and a voice to be reckoned with in Rio. And I would say those two back to back were probably my best performances yet.
So was that Nationals? Was that in Charlotte? Was that the trials?
It was, yes. Sir.
Yeah, I was there. That was you crunched people. That was awesome. And that one, that 100, I think ended up on national television. I think they did a cut in for NBC and showed that live.
They did, and that was really special. You know, it was the first time in the history of Paralympic sport to have live television coverage in the United States of America. So for that to happen in that moment, that's a huge deal for the sport. You know, regardless of my performance in running a great time, I mean, that was one of the biggest moments in Paralympic sport so far in the U.S.
So one of the other moments for me, when I was in London for the Paralympics, it seemed to me, and I wasn't in Beijing, so I don't know, but having 85,000 people in that stadium in London, and I think when you know, talk about the perfect storm, you're coming off of Oscar Pistorius just performing in the Olympics, and everybody knew him, and so here at the Paralympics, the stadiums were full for amputees, wheelchair athletes. I just personally felt that it took the world of challenged athletes, adaptive sports to a whole new level. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. You know, from a personal experience of being there, the fact that I was there was a dream. Shortly after coming home from making the decision to have the amputation, through a little bit more research with Paralympic sport, I ended up coming across Kathy Sellers' number, who was the high performance director for Paralympic track and field at the time, and I remember emailing her. This was 2 months before my amputation, and I said, hey, I just want to introduce myself. My name's Jared Wallace, and I have my amputation in a few months, but I want you to know that I'm going to be on the team going to London in 2012.
Wow.
And so
you do live with the glass overfilling. You don't have this half full, half empty, right? You've got this thing where it's constantly running and overflowing.
That's right. I absolutely try to live that way for sure. So just to walk in that stadium that day for the first time in the opening ceremonies, and then for the first time in my 400 prelim race, was just absolutely a dream come true. And then, as you said, the environment. You know, I didn't really know a lot about Paralympic sport yet, and I knew a little bit about the history of it, and. I wasn't fully prepared for 80,000 people.
That was one of the greatest moments of your career.
Yeah.
Love that. So, Rio, let's talk a little bit about Rio. So you were sixth at the 400 in 2012 in London and fifth at the 100 in 2016, coming off of, you know, the year, like you said, your race in London and your race in Charlotte. Were you okay with that?
Well, so we got down to Rio and had a lot of really good training sessions the first few days. And then a few nights before the prelims, the 100, I ended up getting a respiratory infection.
I wondered about that. Yeah.
So I was under the weather big time. And I was, you know, we were doing the best we could to keep us, keep my body healthy. The hardest part is I was just coughing all night. So I wasn't getting any rest. I wasn't recovering at all. And you know, the performance, unfortunately, showed. You know, when I ran in the prelims, ran 11 flat, which was 0.2 seconds slower than I'd run all year long. I'd run 10 races all under 10.9 that year. And so I knew in the prelims, when I saw the result and the time and how much energy I felt like I had to use in that race, I was definitely nervous, but there was really nothing you can do
right.
about it. And part of the games and part of what makes what Bolt did so amazing is you know, you can be the best athlete all year round, but you also have to weather the storms. And there's a lot of things behind the scenes that people don't consider when they're watching the games, as far as, you know, nutrition and rest and staying healthy and all. You know, there's just a lot of variables that come into play. And unfortunately, in Rio, I wasn't able to weather all of those storms. And it was heartbreaking. You know, as I said before, you know, my two best races in my career, I felt, were the two races prior to that. And I was really ready to, do something special. It was an extremely fast track. There were a lot of world records that were set throughout the time down there. And, you know, I felt like I was in the shape to do that as well. But everything happens for a reason. And, the beautiful thing about running and also, I guess, the perspective I try to live life with is, you know, one race doesn't define who I am. And an outcome and an event is not what I rest my identity upon. And it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, because I, you know, obviously love to, be at my best when I can and perform well and race well. But at the same time, if I put my identity in track and in one race, I'm really setting myself up for failure. And so being able to, walk away from that and be, be upset and hurt and frustrated for a little while is okay. But, kind of just getting back on the horse and saying, all right, time to reset and have new goals. And we'll, get back to the grind. And we've so far been able to do that. So.
Now, how have you had to, because this will be your third Paralympic cycle, right? You're going back hopefully going to Tokyo and hopefully getting on that podium, which would be awesome. How have you had to adapt your training to, just aging a little bit? You're still a young guy, still under 30,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But how have you had to adapt a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. You know, so I'll be 30 in Tokyo, and so I'm definitely no longer the rookie on the circuit anymore.
Right.
A lot of young guys coming up that are really, really talented. And, I think one of the things that I've learned is over the span of my career is every year is different. And yes, you got to look at the big 4-year picture, but you need to take things a year at a time. I have a really great team around me to evaluate where I'm at and to continue to try new things and push the parameters of what I'm capable of. Cause I don't, I as well as my team don't feel like we've quite got there yet. I think there's still some faster times in me and some ceilings that we haven't quite run into. So, we're excited for that process, but training smarter versus harder has been a big transition in the past probably 2 or 3 years. Your body just can't handle going out and just, crushing it just to do it. It's not always who works the hardest that's on the podium. And there's definitely everyone in their own respects works hard. But, I've got to listen to my body. And if I'm, supposed to be doing 6 reps and I get to 5, and, I'm that's a great quality workout and I'm on the verge of, feeling something kind of tighten up or whatever. I'm smart enough now to know that, hey, you know what, let's take this one rep out and, call it a great day and get some good recovery and know that, that choice is going to help me continue to have really high quality training sessions day in and day out. And so that's been something that we've done. And, again, my times have continued to decrease. This year we focused on the 200 and, I've ran a good majority of my races under 22 seconds, which is, you know, was the goal. Just to get under, you know, consistently running 21, as a few years ago we decided to do that in 100 and stay consistently under 11. So we're going to continue to set those goals and continue to try new methodologies when it comes to training. But you know, like I said, we haven't quite maxed out my potential yet, which is exciting for the future and hopefully for 2020.
So what events will you have in 2020? I know they've eliminated some with the single amps and the double amps, and I'm sort of a little confused as to what, will you have 100, 200, and 400?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're confused because I am as well.
It's really confusing to me, this whole, with the single amps and the double amps and some guys, you know, it's all that stuff is driving me a little crazy, to be honest.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. You know, they're probably one of the more well-known classes in Paralympics was T44, just single-blown amputees and 43s as well. And they've changed our number completely to 63s and 64s. So everyone's really confused on what is what and who's who. But we'll get that ironed out and hopefully be able to paint a clear picture in Tokyo through the classification educations that they're going to hopefully be implementing. But they will have the 100 and the 200 for my class. So they took the 400 out. The 63s, which are double below knees, will have the 100 combined with us, and then the 400s. So they will not have a 200 anymore. They'll just run the 100 combined with the single amputees, and the 400 will be
on their own.
Yeah, just double amputees.
Right.
So,
well,
which is good.
I think the positive is I think obviously singles and doubles were put together because there weren't enough athletes back in the day.
That's right.
Now we're getting more. Now there's more double below, double above. The doubles run against the doubles, singles against the singles, and you know, especially in major meets when you've got enough of each.
That's right. And the races are so different, you know. I mean, the style of race, there's no right or wrong either way, but you know, as a single blown amputee, you know, we're going to have a little bit better of a start, but not being symmetrical throughout the middle of the race. You know, if you have a bad step, it's very noticeable and it really impacts your deceleration phase. And as a double amputee, they have a slow start, but it's, you know, everything after 40, 50 meters is just either increasing speed into the finish line. So how the visual aspect of how the race looks is just not symmetrical and can create a little bit of confusion and conversation for a spectator. So hopefully that's part of the, you know, lean into why they're making some of these changes. And, you know, we'll see if it continues to be something that sticks or if, you know, if they decide to go back.
It seems like you're one of those guys who goes, listen, I'm not going to waste energy and time on things I can't control. You tell me what my division is, and I'll go do my thing.
You got it, man. I mean, there's only so many things you can worry about.
Exactly.
In a 24-hour period.
So yeah.
I'm gonna show up. I'm going to do me. I'm going to be as prepared as I can to put on the best performance that I can in that moment. And whoever happens to be on the line next to me, I hope that they put in work because I'm going to be a tough person to beat.
So are you doing some surfing and wakeboarding too?
Oh yeah, man. Whenever I can get out on the lake and get behind the boat, we do a lot of wake surfing. I don't do a ton of ocean surfing just because I live in Georgia.
Right.
So that opportunity is not quite there, but yeah, I get behind the boat and still can do a couple flips on the wakeboard, which is good. The falls hurt a lot worse as you get older though.
Yes, they do.
I will tell you that. But I'm still having a blast doing that. You know, I've got to be careful too. You know, I'm a pretty active guy just in day-to-day life, and you know, I have to realize that running and sprinting is my profession, and so I do need to be careful. You know, it is tempting when I'm getting behind the wakeboard and wanting to try new tricks and stuff. So I try to just stick to the ones I know and you know, call it a day. But I hopefully not in the near future, but in retirement years, we'll get to have a little bit more fun and spend a little bit more time out surfing and wakeboarding.
Well, and it looks like, I mean, surfing now is in the Olympics for 2020 and potentially could be in the Paralympics by 2028. And what's cool is we just had the Adaptive World Championships for surfing out here in beautiful La Jolla, California. You may have to jump into that after Tokyo.
I'm telling you what, man, I'm down. Sign me up. I'm all about it. You know, I was talking to a buddy about golf too. They're considering doing that as well. It's another sport that I absolutely love playing. So I hope to be involved in the Paralympic sporting world for a long time. I've got some guys trying to talk me into jumping on the snowboards and hitting clips.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what happens. There's definitely hopefully there'll be more of Jared Wallace in the Paralympic sport world besides just on the track.
Now, Jared, are you a dad as well?
Not yet. I've been married for 2 years, and my wife Leah and I are beginning that conversation, and we're excited to, you know, we're trying to kind of make the right choice around Tokyo. So we're trying to decide when's the right time to do it. And I'm finishing up my senior year at the University of Georgia. I took 7 years off when I had my amputation, and through recovery and training, I had, you know, just an awesome time in being a professional athlete. But I also know that, you know, one of these days I'm going to, you know, not be running and going to, you know, need to prepare for the future as far as jobs are concerned. So I am my senior year of getting a communications degree at the University of Georgia, and I'm very excited, looking forward to being done in May so that I can enjoy being a full-time professional athlete again, because it's a lot more fun.
So what does the rest of your season hold, or is your season done?
Season's done. I have one more promo street race in Japan that we started last year. Sony's put on an event called the Shibuya City Games, and they put a track down the middle of Shibuya, which is one of the busiest intersections in the world.
Love that.
And they close it down for 4 hours, and we get to do a Paralympic promo on the street. So really awesome stuff. Japan is really doing a ton of things for Paralympic sport, and I'm just excited to be a part of some great companies over in Japan to help, you know, spearhead this movement and watch them as they continue to accept and invite the Paralympic community into the games.
Is it a street quarter, or are they doing street 100, street 200? What are they doing?
So the street that they have, they can get 70 meters of track. So we do a 60-meter race, and then we have, like, high jump pits put at the end, and, like, as soon as you cross the finish line, you just fall into the pit.
That is awesome.
It's borderline dangerous, but it's also awesome.
I love that, because they go, okay, we don't have enough road, and we can't do, like, indoor track. They have the rope, right? They just put the rope out to catch you guys before you run into the wall.
Right.
But they're like, hey, we'll just build sand pits. That'll be good.
That's exactly what we're doing. It's awesome.
What they should do is make it into a long jump, right? So you're running, and then it, you know, it's like a run jump, make it like a little duathlon.
I love it. I'm gonna put that. Hey, our next meeting, I'm gonna throw it out there. We'll see.
I mean, if they're building a sand pit, anyways,
might as well make it happen.
Right. So yeah, it's basically a long runway. It's a 60 meter runway into the long jump, and boom!
There
I love that. I think that's a
there
great idea. So what has been your favorite meet to be at over the years? What's been your favorite place to be?
You know, I have really grown to love Japan. The culture, the people, just their passion for sports. They've really done a great job of promoting Paralympic sport and getting behind Paralympic sport. And I think Tokyo 2020 has played a huge role in that. I've been a part of the Kawasaki Grand Prix, which is part of the World Challenge meet they have, and that's probably been my favorite meet. I've headlined that meet for the past 4 years.
Wow.
Justin Gatlin goes over there and runs that race as well. They have a lot of good able-bodied athletes that are part of this event, and it's just always a great meet. They do such a great job, you know, providing athletes with you know, great training while we're over there, but also just super awesome with hospitality and food there is amazing. So that's been probably become my favorite meet. But before that meet, I would probably say the street races that they put on in Manchester, the Great City Games, or Manchester City Games are really, really cool as well. It's kind of the same thing, just the environment's really great, the atmosphere's really great. Those two would probably be my favorite that I try to do every year.
You know, I really knew nothing about these city races, but I love that. I love doing, you know, 100 or 200 on the street would be awesome. We need some of those in the States.
We're hopefully getting on board. I think Boston actually did one. Adidas did one in Boston this year. I think it was the first time they really did a great job. It's easy to do like a pole vault pit and just put it kind of anywhere. It's a lot harder to put a flat track, you know, down for 100, 200 meters, whatever it is. But they're more places are starting to catch on and trying to make that happen. So it's a really great opportunity for the fans, even more so, just to be interactive with the athletes, because they can stand literally on the edge of the track, watch the race. We step off and we're in the middle of the crowd, just, you know, taking pictures and getting to talk with people who are, you know, fans of the sport and fans of us as athletes, which is really cool.
Well, and the other aspect of this is, you know, as at the level that you're racing, you're more than an athlete, you're an entertainer, right? The whole idea is you're trying to bring excitement to Paralympic sports and challenge athlete sports, so that folks go, okay, look at this is special. This is something that these guys are athletes at a high level.
Absolutely.
And for after, do you see yourself doing another cycle after 2020, or just want to wait and see what happens?
We're going to have to wait and see what happens. I think that if it makes sense, for me to do it, as far as just lifestyle and my body's holding up, and we can justify income wise that we can make it work. Then I definitely think that it's something that I would consider to do. I love track and field. I love the sport. I love the Paralympic community. And in reality, I love my job. And so, as long as I can, do it, I will. But I also have a lot of other things that I'm passionate about, and am aware that running's not going to be forever. So I'll step away at the right time. It won't be too soon, hopefully, if my body holds up.
Usually when people age, they move from 100 to 200 to 400 to 800, they're from 5K to longer distance. But you only have the 100 and 200 when it comes to Paralympics. So you're sort of put in a position of, if I want to stay in this, I got to get faster. And, usually Father Time is undefeated. So you're having to... That's sort of a young man's game, and you're 28. You're still a young guy, but you're getting faster. That's pretty cool.
It's neat, and I mean, the reality is, the young kids aren't getting any slower.
It's
us old guys are the ones that are going to get slower and rotate out. But the exciting thing is, like you just said, I still feel like I've got so much to learn about sprinting,
yes,
and biomechanics and blade running, and even the design that we're continuing to work on in the industry for the blades are adapting and changing. And as they change, it's going to change how we train. It's going to change, how we run. And so I think that all of those factors are playing into, why I'm continuing to get faster. So far, over the past 4 years, I haven't gotten any stronger. My physique hasn't changed any, but I've just gotten smarter. I've gotten smarter in how to train. I've gotten smarter in how to eat. I've gotten smarter in how to run. I've gotten smarter in block starts and how the race is set up. All of those things play huge factors. And one of the exciting things is, the next 2 years we're going to continue to learn in that regard, but we're actually going to try to get bigger. We're going to try to get faster physically. So hopefully in 2 years, I'm going to look like a completely different athlete. And we'll see hopefully a huge increase in my performance and my power, hopefully will be that next level, that will help me, achieve, my goal in 2020, which is to win the gold in the 100 and the 200.
Well, what's fascinating about that is if you look at the bodies of a 400-meter guy compared to a 100- and 200-meter guy, totally different, right? So,
Very much so.
What you'll add more different types of weight training, more power stuff?
Yeah, exactly. We're thankfully, I've got a strength coach. She's a guru and all this stuff, and I don't have to worry about it too much. But we do have we basically are looking at, my body and power output and sprinting and force application, ground contact time, all those things play a role into how fast you run, and your body weight, or the weight that you're carrying, plays a role in how quick you can move it through the air. So we're looking at my body specifically as a bell curve, and we're trying to find what's that point of muscle mass and weight that I can carry, that the more weight I have, the harder I can hit the ground. The harder I can hit the ground, in theory, the faster I can run. But at some point, too much weight even though I'm hitting the ground harder, is not going to allow me to run faster. So we're basically looking at that bell curve, and we're trying to find what's that optimal, you know, weight, power, output, distribution that's going to allow me to be as fast as I physically can be. And so we're at a point now where we've looked at enough data, we've gathered enough data about me over the past 7 years that we're able to make that happen, hopefully.
Love it. Jared, thank you so much for taking so much time, especially on your wife's birthday. I hope I didn't take you away from the cake and all the other good stuff.
Not at all, love. It's been an absolute pleasure, and look forward to hopefully talking soon.
I love it. Keep doing what you're doing, man. We'll definitely chat again. Hopefully we'll get you out here one of these years, come out to our CEF San Diego Triathlon Challenge in October. I think you'd enjoy the weekend.
I would absolutely love that. I will not be swimming, but I will absolutely love to be a part of the event.
We do an amputee running clinic on Saturday. There will be an honor to have you part of it, actually. And then we do adaptive surfing on Friday morning.
I can do both of those.
See?
Man.
Yep. And then we actually have about a 50, maybe it's 100 yards that the kids do, our amputee kids and then wheelchair kids do on Sunday. So we might have to look at your schedule and see if we can get you out here. It'll be an honor to have you.
Well, that sounds like a great weekend. I appreciate it. We'll definitely have to stay in touch and make that happen.
Love it. Jared Wallace has been our guest again. My name is Bob Babbitt. This is Babbittville Radio. We are brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, toughmantri.com, by VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, by Polar, chase your destiny, by Premium Plus Sports, that's premiumplus-sports.com, by USA-swimrun.com, awesome races and awesome places, by our Challenged Athletes Foundation. As I mentioned, we sent out 2,806 grants, funding 95 different sports, $4.3 million sent out in 2018. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.